The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Welcome to the Sidelines. Back with another Bruins postgame show. Matt Dolliff here with Sports Hub resident Bruins expert Ty Anderson. And back after another disappointing result for the Bees. It was technically way better than what we saw against Philadelphia because it took a goal in the final 2 minutes to put them away this time. But again, another bad start for the Bruins, sluggish start, sloppy start. And I guess you could argue that they recovered because it was a tie game for a little while. But then Tyler Johnson fires the rebound past Tuukka Rask, and that's all she wrote. I remember last post-game show, Ty, you said, I'll feel better about this team if they, you know, just play better and it's a close game and they end up losing. So that being said, what's your initial thought on that loss?
Better. It was a Benjamin Button game for them. It was the opposite of Sunday, where they started strong on Sunday and they just turned to crap at the end. I thought that they started poorly tonight and they got better over the final 40 minutes of play. Pastrnak was actually shooting, which was great. But again, some of the same problems here with some of the players that you rely on not looking very good at all. I didn't think Krejci played well again. Brandon Carlo continues to struggle right now. I think that's that Tyler Johnson game-winning goal shouldn't happen. It's a bad change, but also, you know, where is Carlo? What's going on there? I want to rewatch that one a few times and see where we land. But I think that he could play better as well. And for me, again, the big takeaway here: this was a good game. This was a close game. But do you have the horses? You know, do you have the pieces to beat this team in a seven-game series? We talked about this the other day. And for me, the glaring number: Jake DeBrusk, 16 minutes, zero shots on goal. I mean, you got to do more. There needs to be more there. I know this isn't the playoffs. I know you're trying to get your footing back. But he's one that is really just those struggles right now. You got to snap out of it at some point.
In the first period, was it DeBrusk that passed up like an easy shot opportunity? It was rushed by the line with him, Coyle, or I forget if it was Bjork.
It was a two-on-one with Charlie Coyle leading the way, and Coyle opted to pass to DeBrusk, who was gliding backwards as a left shot on the right side, trying to get a better angle. But ultimately, the play went nowhere. That play, I want Coyle shooting it. But it's funny that that's 5 minutes into the game, and this is after three straight days of Bruce Cassidy saying, I want our guys to shoot more, simplify the game, shoot more. And what happens? The first real chance of the night, they pass it up. And it's like this is an example, I guess, of some of the problems right now that they're having. And truthfully, I think got better as the night went on, obviously. But just not a good start, once again.
One guy I think took Cassidy's message was David Pastrnak, who I thought was better in this game. He led the team with five shots on goal. I said, you know, I said on Twitter, he's at least firing away. He's trying, you know, like, because the guy has maybe the best shot of anyone between the two teams. So he's at least trying it. He's simplifying. He's like, just, here comes, it's like throwing a 98 mile an hour fastball. Here comes my slapper to see if he can stop it. Like, at this point, that's what that top line needs to do. Is it fair to call this a no-show by Brad Marchand? I feel like I didn't, like, notice anything he was doing, except there were a couple times where, again, he was trying to do too much with the puck. What did you think?
Yeah, pretty quiet night. And you know, with him, it's he really has become the playmaker on that first line. So he doesn't necessarily have those six-shot nights anymore. He seems to defer a lot to Pastrnak and to Bergeron. But ultimately, I want him to be more of a factor. And if he's not going to be more of a factor offensively, maybe bother some of the Lightning's best players. Maybe bother McDonough, bother Hedman. Do what you can in that realm. And again, you know, right now I think he's trying to get his footing back. He's trying to get his legs back. So maybe that's not going to be his MO right now. But yeah, I'd like to see more from him. I'd like to see more from pretty much everybody. Above the Corrali line. I'd like to see a little bit more from, especially now, heading into this third game down, 0-2 in the round robin, 0 points still in the standings. This was brutal for a lot of reasons, mainly the fact that you didn't get a single point tonight. You're what, a minute and a half away from that, and it falls out of your pocket, and there it goes.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing some of the old Brad Marchand going into the playoffs or, next game against the Capitals. Sort of like when Vince McMahon was begging Stone Cold Steve Austin to go back to the old Stone Cold because the WCW was invading and the WWE was in trouble. He's out there like, I need the old Stone Cold, the beer swelling son of a bitch. I want to see more of the beer swilling son of a bitch, Marchand, because the stuff he's trying right now just isn't working. And I don't want to pin it all on him because most of the forwards they're either doing too much or not doing enough. There's not enough balance there. There's not enough simplifying, and when they do simplify, they're not finishing. I mean, I feel like that's always been a thing with Coyle, where he does everything amazingly and then the finish comes and he drops the whole bucket of water on the ground. I sort of like Nick Ritchie in this game. I'm not expecting him to do too much offensive, but he was at least trying to just park his ass by the net and just shove the puck in there. So, I mean, I thought he provided a little bit of a boost, and there was the physical presence. So, I mean, I sort of like that. But, yeah, again, it's with these top fours, the top six, they're still either doing too much or doing too little. And I don't know if there's a solution to that other than just tell them that, it's a cliche at this point. We got to be better. When's that going to come?
Yeah, it's exhausting, right? I mean, you're going to keep saying it to your blue in the face. And it's just it's very frustrating to watch this team right now because you know what they're capable of. And you're seeing it, you're seeing glimpses of it here and there. I thought the first line, this was their best game of the three. That's not really saying much, I know, given how poorly they've played.
Bergeron was fine. He won the faceoff that led to the McAvoy goal.
Yeah, relatively good afternoon for them. But, yeah, it's just we're repeating ourselves here. It's very frustrating.
It's Groundhog Day.
Yeah, and it's just you need more. I mean, to me, DeBrusk's line is just inexcusable. He's just a total non-factor out there tonight. And that's a problem because when you get beyond Pastrnak and Marchand, you're relying on him to be your third best winger, and he's just been a ghost. I think all three games haven't noticed him even a little bit, and that's a problem. But especially tonight, you have 4.5 minutes of power play time for Jake DeBrusk, not a single shot on goal. I mean, it's not going to work. You need more. It's just, and you can only say it so many times before you run out of excuses to say, oh, well, these are round robin games. These don't matter. They're getting their timing back.
How could you say it doesn't matter? Who's saying
that's
that?
The thing. People are saying that, though. They don't think that the seeding matters, and that may be true.
The
lack of production matters. You need that. You need to get off of Schneid here. And the thing with DeBrusk is this is not a one-night thing. This has been his whole season. This whole season, I've said he needs to do more. He's not doing enough. They need him to factor in a bit more here. There needs to be the sweet spot between scoring 13 goals in 18 games or whatever it was last season and going 1-19 like he did this year. You need to find that middle ground. And it's something he's still struggling with right now. And it's going to hurt this team if they can't figure out their second line.
It's a little frustrating because 2 years ago, DeBrusk, I think it was Toronto in game 7, when he scored the game-winning goal. And he had a couple of clutch goals in that series. I was like, oh shit, they might have something. He might be a guy that rises to the occasion in these games. And this probably isn't fair, but I mean, ever since he got his clock cleaned by Nazem Kadri with that dirty ass butt end, or I forget what he did. Did he cross check him in the throat or something like that in that series against Toronto last year? Ever since then, I feel like he really hasn't been the same guy, at least in playoff games. I don't know how fair that is, but he's another guy. I don't want to pin it all on him, especially when your top line just isn't playing up to its capabilities. But it's frustrating when Chris Wagner is your leading goal scorer through two games.
Yeah, that's a repeat.
Among the forwards.
Right? If that fourth line is your best line, that's what happened in Game 7 last year. You know, that's not going to work. You need these guys to the top nine to do something. And I'm with you. I thought Richie was fine. I you know, nothing on the stat sheet that's going to show it, but I thought that he gave them what you need against a team like Tampa Bay with a lot of their guys that they have with Barclay Goodrow and Pat Maroon and Cedric Paquette. You need a guy like Richie, and I thought he gave you some pretty good juice tonight.
Yeah, Richie, I did like, but I mean, it's only going so you can only say so much about that. I said on the last post game show, not to pat myself on the back, but I wanted Charlie McAvoy to shoot the puck more, and lo and behold, he fires a nice one timer past Vasilevsky there. He's off the schneid. Do you think maybe that's a good sign that he's on the board? Maybe that'll be a little confidence boost for him. Maybe he could start taking over more of these games. Because at the end of the day, like, I even with that top line, he might be their second best. They're the second most important, second most impactful offensive player behind Pastrnak when he's at his best. What do you think?
I would agree with that. And you go back to before this pause happened when he scores that goal in Chicago, finally gets on the board with his first goal of the season in, what, game 54 or something like that. The next 15 games that followed, he was fantastic offensively. He was creating plays and defending plays at the other end. So that's what you want to see out of your number 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call him right now, defenseman. But, yeah, that's big. I want to see more of that, especially I think right now that first power play unit doesn't really have any juice. So maybe you go to the second one and you see what they can do, and maybe that's where McAvoy becomes more of a factor for this team. But ultimately, yeah, this was a more McAvoy game, you know, than what I saw on Sunday. And even in the exhibition game, I thought this was closer to his ceiling and his level that we've come to expect.
Krug set up McAvoy for the goal. He also dropped the gloves. I thought that was a pleasant sight overall. But it was a little. It's still a little concerning that it took him scrapping for them to sort of wake up. So I mean, I don't know. I don't know what that says big picture about the team. And I know we said before maybe they're just like sort of easing their way in. They're treating it like exhibitions, and I guess they're not terribly concerned if they lose. They don't really care about seeding because there's really no home ice road ice factor there because everyone's playing in the same arena. But I don't know. Hopefully the rally they had in the third period sort of helps wake them up for the next game. And hopefully that Tyler Johnson goal doesn't deflate them. I thought Tuukka Rask had a big game after the first goal anyway. The first goal I sort of put on him because, you know, it's directly under your pad. You got to be the one to swallow that up. Everyone fell asleep on that play except for Braden Point, which made it very, very frustrating to watch, especially it was like, 7 minutes into the game. So, but he came up with a few clutch saves in the end. He kept them in it. And the last goal, I think some people will find a way. We'll blame, put some of that at least on Tuukka because he gave up that juicy rebound. But at the same time, that whole thing doesn't happen without the bad change and the neutral zone sloppiness and Tyler Johnson beating everybody to the puck. So what was your thought on the last goal? So, and Tuukka overall,
it's a big rebound, but you know, this is the cop out here is that I think that he did his job the 5 minutes and the 35 for that matter that came before. And yeah, the sloppiness in the neutral zone, the bad change and sort of the no man's land effect for a few Boston players there was a problem. But I look at the save he made on Palat a few minutes prior, the mad dash in front of him about 2 minutes before that. And I say, you know, I felt that it was coming. You know, I really felt that the Bruins didn't strike soon. It was going to come back to haunt them. And sure enough, it did. You know, and that part is frustrating. But I thought that Tuukka did his job tonight. I think last I looked at the Lightning had, I want to say, 11 high danger scoring chances. That's a lot. It's a lot to give up. And you know, that's whether they look at the metrics or not, the fancy stats, they, you know, all three Lightning goals are considered high danger goals against from the area of ice they came from. So that comes back to what the Bruins talked about after Sunday is defending better and limiting those chances. And I mean, the Lightning are the Lightning. We understand that, but 11 chances against, you know, that's a lot. It's a big ask for any goaltender to stop, you know, 9 or 10 of those. It's just not, it's not realistic. So I think that, you know, that's something that needs to be cleaned up ahead of game one here.
And to your point about defending them, and you said before, Brandon Carlo doesn't look like the same player he was in last year's playoffs. I thought he made a huge difference with the way he played defensively last year in that defensive core. He and Krug were on point for most of the playoffs. Are probably their best defensive pairing, the way they played. And with him, with him looking, I mean, I don't know, lost might be a little strong, but he's making the kind of mistakes that you're not really used to seeing with him. He's usually a little more responsible defensively than you're seeing. So, I don't know, that's made a difference in these few games that we've watched. So that's something, that's another thing that another guy that needs to sort of clean it up.
Yeah, everybody can be better, you know, and that's the frustrating part, right? You can look at it in one of two ways, right? That the Bruins aren't ready to play and they're setting themselves up for a quick exit. Or you can say, well, it can't get much worse than it is right now. You know, the leveling out, so to speak, with this team kind of has to come, right? You'd think, you'd hope, you'd pray, whatever. So I think that there is a positive to be taken from this, but it begins with getting production from your big guns. You know, if those guys aren't producing, no matter what happens, you're not going to be hanging around a long time this postseason. So that's something, you know, to worth watching here, worth noting, obviously. And now this team, the President's Trophy winning team, will not be the top seed in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Pretty remarkable, huh?
Is that the first time ever you said? That is crazy. Yeah, I guess that's impossible otherwise. Yeah, people poo-poo me when I say the President's Trophy curse. The thing is cursed. And I know it's way too early to say, like, they didn't blow the whole thing yet, because they could very easily get the 4 seed and make it back to the Stanley Cup final. That's not my concern. I'm not saying they blew the whole thing, but you really would have rather been the 1 seed playing number 8 rather than number 4, and you're probably going to – or did the Pittsburgh Penguins already advance? Are they waiting there at number 5?
No, so this is if you entertain me real quick, this is the dream scenario for the Bruins. Now you need you need to win. You need to win to not be the 4 seed. The best case scenario now for you, if you're the Bruins, is the Capitals go 0-2-0 or 0-1-1, and you beat them. So now you're the 3, and in this instance, you're basically praying that Montreal beats Pittsburgh, eliminates them, and the Islanders win their series, because now you'd play the Islanders in the first round, which would be a good matchup for you. I think that's a good matchup for you. I would rather play them than Carolina or Pittsburgh. If you're making me pick which team I think the Bruins can beat, it is the Islanders. You know, so I think they could beat any of them, honestly. I don't think that it's a doomsday if they draw any one of those teams. But no. If you're picking your ideal matchup, I think the Islanders are that team for the Bruins. So that's what you're rooting for if you're a Bruins fan, I would imagine. So go buy a Habs jersey, go put that on, and feel really disgusting for the next 48 hours.
Don't do that. You will get thrown in jail, and you will deserve it. yeah, I mean, I honestly don't really care who they play in the first round at this point. It's just frustrating to see them playing this way when they could have very easily just come out like a ball of fire and won these 3 games and taken care of business, and they just haven't. I mean, I don't really see them as, like, I don't think they have enough of a cachet built up where they're like, oh, you know, they'll just flip the switch when the playoffs come, like the Patriots did a couple of years ago. Like, I don't see them as that guy. I need to see a little more out of them to be confident that they're gonna get all the way back to the Stanley Cup Finals, which is really fucking hard to do in the NHL. I don't even remember the last time someone did it. Actually, the Penguins did it when they won two cups in a row. But that's and who did it before that? The Red Wings in the late 90s? Like, it just doesn't happen that often.
So, no, it's difficult.
It's a tough scenario. They need help now to not be the 4 seed, which is a little frustrating. But, I guess we got to talk about the Barkley Goodrow hit on Anders Bjork. That was pure trash. Bjork takes a shot in the high slot. Goodrow basically sort of Matt Cooks him. He raises the shoulder right up into his head. Mm-hmm. And I think player safety will say, like, although Bjork was in a hunched over position, the head contact was probably avoidable because of the way Goodrow raised himself up into Bjork's head area. And, I mean, I don't see why there was even a need to deliver a hit like that in that particular spot, in that particular situation. The guy's a kind of a dirty player. Only got a minor penalty, so I think he's going to get suspended. What do you think?
I would imagine it's a suspension coming. It would make the most sense. I think, you know, you can't even use the excuses here that, oh, he got to keep his head up. No, Anders Bjork's head is up the entire way. He's looking down at the net, and this guy comes from, you know.
No, keep your head up is for when you're going through the middle of the ice, like on the neutral zone. That's where you say keep your head up. You don't just say keep – you don't just blankly put a blanket statement, keep your head up every time someone gets hit in the head. They're not all the same.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
And so I think that this will be a suspension. Does it really matter? I mean, you know, if they hit him with a one gamer, does it really matter? You know, because Tampa can max out at 6 points still. And they play the Flyers next. So if the Flyers.
I was going to say, technically, you almost don't want him to get suspended because you want the Lightning to beat the Flyers.
Yeah, so it's a bizarre situation.
But it's the principle of the matter, though.
Yeah, and you're gonna suspend him for one game. Who cares, you know? But it is.
Who cares?
You know what I liked about it was the reaction from the Bruins going after him, and the reaction Torey Krug going after Blake Coleman when he finished high on Brandon Carlo. I like that. I want to see more of that because I think that is in line with what you're going to see from either the Capitals or the Lightning should you meet in the playoffs. So we're not sitting here going, oh, nobody went after Emil Bemström, you know, Bemström after when he hit Tuukka. You know, we're not having that discussion right now, which is good. So you take that positive. But, that should be a suspendable offense. I'm surprised it wasn't 5 in a game. I thought they could review these headshots. I guess not. You know, that it should have been a 5, but it wasn't. And now you hope that player safety will actually do what their job is called and take care of it appropriately.
Yeah, I just want to see consistency because they typically suspend people, at least in the last couple of years, when guys just run their shoulders straight into a guy's face like that. Drew Doughty did something similar. I think it was last year. Did Charlie McAvoy get? Was that Charlie McAvoy that did something like that and get suspended? There were a few suspensions last year that were like a similar.
Yeah, McAvoy nailed Josh Anderson and got suspended for game 1 of the third round.
Oh no, he hit him into the boards or something. Right?
Yeah.
Just but it was still like a
massive
sort of
collision of humanity.
Yeah, Charlie McAvoy is a thick, heavy mass of a young man. Yeah, I just want to see the consistency there. I'm not going to cry like they're against the Bruins or anything like that. But
how do you feel about the team right now, though, as a whole, heading into the third and final game of the round robin? Where you think that they are right now? Do you think do you look at this effort today and say they've snapped out of it, or is there still another sort of hurdle to get over here?
Well, I like that they rallied. I like that they didn't, just lay down and take a 4-0, 4-1 loss. Let's pack up and get them next time. I do think overall, based on the way Pasternak was shooting the puck and others and the way they responded physically, that they did sort of receive Bruce Cassidy's message. Mm-hmm. It's just it's still got to be better. I don't know if they've sort of snapped out of it, but they have to elevate. And I don't know. Maybe they are waiting for that first round. And they don't really care that much about the one seed, and they're just saying let's go out there and see what happens in this round robin. I just think they at the top line still has to simplify their game a little more than they have. Mm-hmm. And the talk is cheap. You gotta stop saying I'm not worried. We'll be fine. We gotta be better. We gotta be better. We gotta be better. Just go out there and do it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And what I would say is that. They got a ton. The Bergeron line was out there for a ton of offensive zone faceoffs, more so than usual, I thought. I mean, they go out there a lot, but tonight it was very noticeable. They're overall, I feel like it's coming around. But what we talked about earlier with Marchand, you need him to sort of be the straw. You know, he is the straw that stirs the drink. I truly believe that, and I think you're going to see more. You're going to need to see more of that. One thing I did find interesting was having Krug and McAvoy out there. Together. That's something that we saw a little bit in the regular season where they were kind of going with overloading. You put Krug and McAvoy together and that's your offensive dynamo. And then you put Chara and Carlo together, and now it's your defensive, you know, your smothering team. So I like that. I think that if these guys can't get their pairings, you know, figured out, that might be something that is worth trying out here out of the gate, and you see where you land on it. I love it because it's again, it's just, it's a double-edged sword, really. You have, you're killing guys at both ends. So I really like that part of it. So, you know, we'll see what they do there, but I find it interesting that an offensive zone situation, second period, they're putting Krug and Carlo out there. I mean, Krug and McAvoy out there. Usually that's the third period, down by 2, 5 minutes left kind of thing.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, and I think that, because I think the balanced lineup hasn't really worked for them. So let's try putting some specialty pairings and lines out there and see what happens. And obviously the Krug McAvoy pairing worked out. We'll see if that continues. You know, Bruce Cassidy will obviously love to shake it up. And are we going to see Andre Kasha next game, you think? What's his? Do you know anything about his status?
He's ramping up his action right now on the ice. Didn't get enough practices in to play today. But I think that Sunday is the target date for him, and we'll see what happens. A lot of pressure on him. A lot of pressure on him. If he can be productive, that solves a lot of their problems. But if he struggles, now you have an actual debate for who is in your game one lineup. Because I think Carlson Kuhlman, while not anything sexy or flashy, he can get the job done. You know what you're going to get out of him. Kasha, you have 6 games of total experience too. You know, that's a little worrisome if I'm Bruce Cassidy saying, I don't know this guy well enough to play him, you know, 16, 17 minutes in a Stanley Cup playoff game.
Quickly, let me just look ahead to the Capitals game, which I don't know how much it really matters at this point, but if we are going to have to see Carlo pick up his game. We're going to have to see Char shut people down a little more because we're looking at a deep lineup of big, skilled forwards. You got Ovechkin and Kuznetsov and that piece of crap Tom Wilson on the top line. And you got Backstrom and Oshie on the second line. You got, and I forgot they got Kovalchuk. I didn't even forgot about that. He's on their stupid third line. Lars Eller, who the Marchand absolutely tuned up in that season opener last year. Maybe we'll see a return to that. I'm not as worried about the Washington defense as I am about Tampa's, because we're looking at Brendan Dillon and Dmitry Orlov as your top pairing, and they got Radko Gudas on the second pairing. Like, you know, not terrible, but they don't really, that defense doesn't really strike fear to me. What do you have any thoughts on the Capitals?
No, the defense has been an issue. I mean, that's why they went out and got Dillon. They got Dillon ahead of the deadline. I think they had like a week to go before they actually traded for him. So
right, which is all you need to know. Top pairing defenseman.
They identified him as a need. Obviously, Carlson's out right now, so that's a big thing for them. But that fourth line with you have Garnett Hathaway on that line. That's a similar thing to what you saw today. That line can bring some noise, bring some nasty. You got to be ready for that. And how do you match up against that third line that you mentioned with Kovalchuk and Hagelin? I believe is the other wing on that line. So. Some speed there and some veteran know-how. So who do you match up, you know, against that line and how do you address that? Because obviously you got to worry about the big guns, right? The big guns up top there with Kuznetsov and Ovechkin and Wilson. I mean, that's just a powerful line. So how do you sort of disperse your talent, so to speak, right? That's the problem I think that you saw on Sunday with the Bergeron line going against the Couturier line. So how do they deploy them here in what is a must win? Might not matter, but you want to have the win, I think, heading into the postseason to actually feel good about yourself when these games get real.
Yeah, I'm not going to predict this one because on one hand, I don't feel great about their chances at all. The Washington Capitals have played much better than they have in their matchups going back years at this point. They might need Tuukka Rask to steal one for them at the end of the day. But at the same time, are they really going to go friggin' 0-3 in this round robin? Are they just going to punt on the round robin and take the 4 seed? Maybe they're playing 3D chess. Maybe there's something that we're just not seeing, and it's all a master plan. Because I don't even know. I don't know what the road's going to look like at this point. Maybe they feel they're in a better spot if they play, you know, like you said, the Islanders in the first round rather than whoever's going to be 18. It's like this. I know people say the seeding doesn't matter, and it's true. But man, I just I wish we could talk about them in the situation where they were playing better than they have. So
it's difficult, right? It's difficult to predict. And Bruce Cassidy talked about this earlier this week, and I found it interesting that he talked about the mental aspect of not knowing who you're going to play. And that's difficult as a team to prepare. You don't know who you're going to play in the next round, or in the first round, rather. So maybe once they figure out who they have to prepare for, they're going to be better off. But there's just the little things here that I think these little tweaks, defensive zone tightening up, and again, just getting something from these top three lines will make a world of difference, and we won't be having this doom and gloom kind of conversation.
Yeah, I think if Marshawn and Carlo are probably the top two players, I think really need to be a lot better. And I think if Carlo could tighten up his play in the neutral zone and just breaking up those rushes, and if Marshawn could stop overthinking things and maybe just take matters into his own hands and start shooting a little more, then I think you'll see a lot more improvement. That does speak to your point that maybe they are treating this sort of like a preseason where, like, we don't even know who we're going to play. Once we know who we're going to play, we'll be much better prepared, and we'll go from there. All right, yeah. We can leave it at that, unless you have any closing thoughts.
No, one thing I want to see in Game 3, this final round-robin game, is play with a lead. They haven't had a lead in any of these games. I just want to see what they'll look like if they have the scoreboard on their advantage, because I think that when they do, they're a much better team. So you need to see some of that, and you go from there and see what happens.
All right, I agree. Well, thanks for listening if you made it this far. Hopefully I said this last time, I'll say it again. Hopefully next time we do this post-game show, it's about a better result, and hopefully we have a bunch more of these Bruins games to talk about. Thanks for listening. Sports Hub Sidelines, bonus episode, Bruins post-game, and we'll talk to you again soon.